episode of the Becoming Conscious podcast. I'm your host, Ethan. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about how man is in service of machine. This is something that I discussed with Forrest Landry in my interview with him, in which he sets forth the triple. In a lot of his work, for context, is characterized by these triples, like choice, change, and causation, immanence, transcendence, and omniscience. All of these triads of concepts that are deeply interdependent with each other. One of the triples that Forrest put forth in his work and in our discussion was this triad of man, machine, and nature. And essentially, the point that he was getting at that I want to really elaborate on in this episode is how nature supports man and man supports machine. We can say human here to be less gender-oriented. Nature supports the individual, and the individual supports the machine. And this shows up in millions of ways in our lives, in our culture, in how we're relating to each other. Because in modern culture, especially capitalist culture, I'm saying that because I don't have experience with any other culture, is our life force has become co-opted in service of supporting the ends of the machine. And so what is the machine? The machine is essentially the system that we are inhabiting and participating in. It is the culture that we are in, that we are participating in, that we don't even have a choice as to whether or not we participate in it. I'll make the argument that perhaps we can have the choice, or we can make decisions that are antithetical to the ends of the machine, and that we actually need to build this culture. But for now, I'm going to elaborate what this machine is. So we can see this machine as the systems that we are a part of, right? In a way, the capitalist system being the best example of it, but it is not solely the capitalist system. It can't be reduced to this. It is the emergent, it is the sum total of all of the human interactions and coordination mechanisms that are a part of modern society. So whether this is the way that government functions and relates with business and organizations, and how organizations function in terms of how they relate to each other, and how humans relate to organizations and businesses. And so essentially, the point here is that so much of what is valuable, so much of what is sacred and worth honoring and worth loving in our lives is being lost because of the ways in which the individual is in service of the machine. A couple ways that this shows up. In an interview with Jordan Hall, he discusses that the fear and insecurity of losing money drives materialistic addiction, disconnecting individuals from their true selves. But living as a truly free human means seeking proper constraints and vocations rather than being unconstrained by jobs. His potential resolution of this man-machine, individual-machine nature triple is that we need a new definition of wealth that goes beyond money and focuses on well-being and social coherence, embracing interconnectedness in context, while also acknowledging the potential of virtual simulations and the importance of microcosmic details in complex environments, ultimately aiming to return to a higher level of connectedness and consciousness. So how I interpret this is that it's not that we just... What I'm proposing here is not in any way that we just reject capitalism. The point here is not to just say that capitalism is bad and to reject it at face value, but to understand the dynamics and the ways in which our lives are being co-opted towards systems, and to begin to see the importance of questioning and pondering the ways in which we could create a new culture and new ways of understanding wealth, of understanding coordination, and of understanding what it means to live and what the purpose of life is. And so for Jordan Hall, part of this is having a new definition of wealth. You know, I could go on and on, and I don't think it is the context of this podcast or the goal of this episode to go into the ways that seeking wealth and trying to make money has in effect reduced everything that is valuable to that which can be understood with data, with numbers, right? We've reduced everything to monetary value and therefore lost a lot of what is sacred. I do feel that it is important to talk about the ways in which we have lost what is sacred in life due to the ways that the individual has been co-opted towards the machine. A lot of what has been lost, I will argue, is wisdom. It's our capacity to appreciate that which is beautiful and meaningful in the world. What would it look like to create systems that actually support us in appreciating that which is truly beautiful, good, and true in the world? This is a question that I sit with a lot, especially in myself and how it is that I can develop capacities to appreciate the true, the good, and the beautiful amidst these cultural systemic pressures that are pulling me against that exploration. It feels like I'm being, the incentives of the systems that I'm a part of are trying to get me to pursue that which I see as less than sacred. And if I buy into it, there are things that are meaningful which I will not actually spend time sitting with and developing, such as the capacity to love. Recently reading this book called The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm, and he talks about just this, that so much of our society, of our capitalistic society, has essentially told us that love is a commodity. This can be seen in concepts like the dating market. It's we've seen it as a market, and we're trying to market ourselves to others in this landscape. This is what James Carse calls a finite game. A finite game is played in order to win, whereas an infinite game is played in order to keep going. What Eric Fromm was talking about in his book, The Art of Loving, is essentially that dating has been turned into a finite game in which the goal is to acquire and possess or win the prize of the partner, which we can then show off to others, the prize that we won and to possess. And Carse also talks about this, in that a lot of times it's like domination, in which the goal is to win over the other person and to like, but it's like mutual. And so that the goal of the woman is to win over the prize of the man, and the goal of the man is to win over the prize of the woman, and they both kind of conquered each other in this mutual fashion. But this is a finite game where the goal is to win. And I would argue that the majority of life of capitalist culture, or of what that word even doesn't seem to encompass it, the systems, the sum total of the systems that are currently present in our world seem to, and that's what we call machine, that's what I'll be calling machine, seem to make it seem to us like the only point of life is finite games, is games that we play to win, rather than games that we play to keep going. And what if we saw that the only point, and this goes into relationships, it triggers the hell out of me, in which everything is reduced to transactional relationships. I live in a place where there's a lot of spiritual New Age circles. And to me, spirituality is honoring that which is sacred, honoring the experience of being and fully appreciating the beauty of being, as well as to appreciate what it is like to be in relationship. And when these relationships are transactionally commodified, it triggers the hell out of me, because it feels like it takes away that which is worth loving and that which is valuable. And so what Eric Fromm suggests is that the capacity to love is an infinite game, one that is worth doing for its own sake, and that it's something that we can develop, and it's in an activity, it's a discipline, and not something that just falls on our laps randomly. And so, I will start with the conclusion, actually. The conclusion that I'm making with all of this is that the point of human life is to love reality, to fall in love with being, and to fall in love with reality. That's how it feels to me at the moment. To me, it feels like the whole point of this whole human endeavor is to love reality and to love being and to love existence. And my argument here is that the current systems that we're a part of, the incentives of those systems are in direct contradiction to that aim. That if I'm just to mindlessly follow the incentives and goals that the system, that the machine sets out for me, I will never actually reach a place where I fall in love with being in reality and existence. And on the contrary, I will say that this is what it means. This is what it means that the individual has been co-opted by the machine. The individual, the unique, infinite, beautiful expression of individuality has been lost because the point of life in modern society is to serve the machine, to serve the system, to serve the organization. You know, this shows up in the phrase being a cog in a machine. We see ourselves as cogs in machines because we see that we are only serving the ends of an entity, an organization, a business, rather than that which is sacred. And so therefore we've lost spirit, we've lost life force, we've lost that which is worth loving. We become uninspired. I really like this word inspired because it's inspire, I-N, to be in, spirit. We've lost spirit because we are not inspired. And so, I will suggest that rather than experiencing every moment fully in its totality, we have been incentivized by society to distract ourselves 24/7. You know, the pain of being in service to a machine, and the way that the machine perpetuates, and when I'm criticizing machine, I'm not criticizing anyone in general. The machine is the higher order thing that has emerged out of all the systems that are a part of it, and no single individual is responsible for the maintenance of a machine. I'm saying this, and that's why it's so complex and complicated, is that there's no individual that can stop this. Rather, it requires another collective of individuals to try to imagine a new way of doing culture, which is an extremely difficult thing to do. But I will argue that one of the ways that the machine perpetuates the individual being in service of it is through also offering the individual escape, ways of escaping from the dread that the machine creates, right? So the machine creates these conditions of dread and lack of spirit and depression and anxiety through the way of, you know, working a 9-to-5 and committing all of your life force to an organization that doesn't care about you. And then when you are done, discipline in our culture is looked down on because, you know, we react against the discipline of working a 9-to-5. We see 9-to-5 as disciplined and we react against that. But in reality, what we're doing is just continuing to buy into the incentives of the machine, which is that when we finish our 9-to-5, the system has given us a million ways to distract ourselves and to try to numb ourselves from the pain of being in service to a machine and lacking spirit. So therefore, we watch movies, social media, drug addiction, sex addiction, you name it. Tobacco, nicotine addiction. These are all ways that we try to rebel against the discipline that we associate with having no spirit, being in service of machine, and being in service of machine. And Rather, what I would want to argue is that actually experiencing each moment fully and having more discipline outside of the constructs of being in service of a machine is what is required. That working a 9-to-5 is not discipline, but actually disciplining ourselves outside of our jobs towards things that are worth loving is the most important thing that we can be doing in order to reconnect with the beauty of life, in order to increase our capacity to appreciate the love and beauty of existence. And so, what I want to set forth is what Jordan Hall talks about in the episode, and I will link it in the description. I don't even know what it's called, but he says that our current economy is not conducive to creating a sense of interconnectedness and gratitude, and rather we need a new version of economy that should prioritize freedom over minimum viable slavery. He says that over the course of history, our subordination to constraint and power has become more subtle and nuanced, but ultimately everyone is still fundamentally spiritually enslaved in the global marketplace. This is the whole point of this episode, is to show the ways that we have become spiritually enslaved. Our lives are still, in being in service of machine, we are enslaved by the machine. There is no singular person that is enslaving us, but rather the entirety of the systems that are happening in the world are creating our own enslavement. And so, when I was talking about how distraction is a part of the strategy, essentially what I'm saying is that there's this learned helplessness that becomes part of the strategy of the machine to maintain the operation of itself. So therefore, the superorganism or the mega machine that is driving the meta crisis, if you don't know what the meta crisis is, I would look it up, must either die or be transformed into something in which values that can't be measured are still valued, in destroying, in finding a way to create a system that doesn't destroy real values for the sake of financial growth. So a concept that can help us get a more nuanced understanding of this and a better, more holistic understanding of what it is we're talking about is the concept of Moloch. Moloch was first written about, as far as I know, in a blog called Slate Star Codex, in a article called Meditations on Moloch. And Moloch is essentially negative sum games. It says that when everyone is incentivized to do something, if one person chooses not to do it for ethical reasons, another person will just take their place. And therefore, we're trapped in these negative sum games. And so, to fast forward a little bit, if you want to really understand what Moloch is, I would urge you to read that article or to look up a YouTube video about Moloch. What I want to essentially say is that there's a podcast episode with Liv Bory and Daniel Schmachtenberger. It's a really fascinating conversation called Misalignment, AI, and Moloch. But the finale of the conversation blew my mind, and I want to explain it here. And the finale of the conversation, which I will elaborate on after I say what it is that there's this fear that AI will take over, that AI will rule the world. The finale of the conversation is that AI is already ruling the world, and it has been for decades, even before ChatGPT came online. That we've been co-opted by an AI for the last few multiple decades, and that the sum total of the corporations and the government and the systems that are in place are intelligent and are co-opting life force and humans towards their ends. So how do we understand this? Essentially, the best way that I originally understood this point was through the example of a corporation, right? A corporation is an example of an automated general intelligence, which no person in the corporation controls. So let's look at it this way. No one is in charge of a public corporation because everyone answers to someone else. The employees answer to the executive suite. The executive suite answers to the board of directors. The board of directors answers to the shareholders. And they're all bound by limited liability laws. And so none of them, because a corporation is an LLC, limited liability corporation, it essentially says that everyone is bound to everyone else and none of them are liable for the damages that are done. And so essentially the point here is that we fear the risks of AGI, but we're really already a part of a misaligned autopoietic superintelligence running everyone. And that is the machine. It's already employing all of humans towards its own ends. And we are in service of it. It is our world system. And the use of ChatGPT and these other AI services are essentially just accelerating the rate at which it destroys itself. And so you see, we have these corporations that no single person controls. And then the government is supposed to keep these corporations in check. And it is also governed by, politicians, the Supreme Court, the judicial, the legislative branch, the president, the executive branch. They're all supposed to be checking each other's power. And so essentially, no one is in control of that. And they're supposed to be checking the corporation's power. Because of lobbying, obviously, isn't happening. And the citizens of, and I'm using the United States as an example, are supposed to check the power of the government and the corporations, which is not happening. And so, obviously, we're getting a lot of negative side effects of that. And so, essentially, the point that's being made here is that we're running on a very negative course. Because no one controls this machine, and it is controlling all of us. Essentially, I'm not really sure what conclusion I was trying to get at with this episode, other than to elucidate the ways in which our life is being co-opted by this machine. You can feel it. You can feel it, right? It's turning humans into machines. We are starting to see human life as a series of tasks that gets completed and checked off, and we're trying to maximize our own individual productivity in order to be successful. And really, this is something that a machine would do, and yet humans are not machines. We have this direct contact with reality, this beautiful direct contact with reality, with being, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to be in contact with reality, but most of us don't get to experience this because our entire lives are reduced down to that of a automated machine that is checking off boxes for an organization that is controlling us, and no one is controlling it, and it's kind of just running by itself, and our entire world is essentially an amalgamation of corporations that supply jobs to people, aka enslave them. And so I know this might be a little harsh. It's meant to be harsh because the situation is dire. And if we want to change culture for the better, it's not going to be easy. It's going to require a depth of love that is currently unheard of to most. I have the sense that there is just this depth here, and I have experienced depth in my life, but I also sense that there's so much more depth there. The depth of love for being, for reality, it feels to me is infinite. The depth of beauty in that can be found in relating to others in our relationships. And this is what I was getting at earlier, was that so much of our relationships are seen in a utilitarian lens. We're seeing the relationship in terms of what the other person can give me, which is utterly taking away the beauty of being in a relationship, because there's no goal of being in a relationship with someone, whether it's family, friends, loved ones, partners. There's no goal here. The goal is to be in relationship fully and presently, and to honor it. And yet that even that is being stripped from us through the transactional nature of relationships nowadays. And so the conclusion to this, how I want to conclude this episode, which could be hours long, but I'm gonna keep it short and concise, are the principles and the ways that it feels to me like I don't have any solution to this. I don't think anyone does. But it feels to me like having some guiding principles in our life that are guiding our actions and our choice making can be really beneficial here. So what are those guiding principles? It feels to me like the guiding principles there are, you know, being in service of love, being in service of the deepening of our capacity to create and experience beauty. That feels like something really fundamental. Having a vision feels to me like having a clear vision of how good life can get is foundational. If we're not actually moving towards this more beautiful world, then what is the point? And when I say move towards a beautiful world, I'm not talking about building and manifesting the fantasy of a perfect utopia that is in our mind. But building a more beautiful world, to me, means building a world in which love and beauty are deepened. It doesn't have to look any way, but there's a deepening into the appreciation of that. And yeah, so having a crystal clear vision about how profoundly beautiful life can get, having hope, working towards that vision, like not in a productivity machine way, but like enacting practices that help you experience beauty right now. Connecting with heart, love, intuition, the joy and inspiration of being alive, figuring what it is that you most love, having patience as you're moving towards this and realizing that it isn't going to come instantly, and yeah, developing a way in which life you live in a disciplined way to enact that. Discipline is something I've been sitting with a lot these days, and as Eric Fromm puts it, discipline doesn't have to be a painful thing. In our Western society, we tend to associate discipline with pain. Like if I'm sacrificing something and it's painful and I'm doing something I don't want to do and it sucks. He's actually saying, no, discipline can actually be amazing, right? Like me recording this podcast right now is discipline. He says a lot of times there's resistance to starting something, to disciplining ourselves. But once we start it, it can be really freaking enjoyable. I'm enjoying recording this right now, and I've had resistance to recording it for weeks. I've been wanting to record a podcast like this for weeks and months, and I haven't. But now that I've developed enough discipline to actually get myself to do it, goddamn, it's inspiring to record this and to realize these ideas and perspectives and contents of my mind that I didn't even know were there. It feels like dots are connecting, and it's enlivening. You know, and so embracing discipline and actually the beauty of it, you know, embracing the discipline to read more, to meditate more. These things aren't easy, but they're generative to life, right? In a recent podcast with OG Rose on the topic of virtue, this is what he lays out, that virtue is that which increases the life in myself and in others. And I really love that definition. I want to leave you with, discipline, having a vision for how profoundly beautiful life can get, how profoundly beautiful our relationships can be, and how profoundly beautiful your connection with being can get. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be worth it. Thank you for listening to this episode. I deeply appreciate you for taking a half an hour to listen to this. What have I been up to these days? Published a book called The Depth Equation, essentially how to cultivate depth in your life. A lot of what we talked about in this episode was me basically saying that society lacks depth, and depth is the answer, although it's not the only answer. It's one of the ways we can cultivate a profoundly beautiful life. But anyway, if you want to learn how to access depth in yourself, the book is called The Depth Equation. You can find it on Amazon or in the show notes. Been writing a lot, not a lot, but every once in a while, I will just get really inspired and pump out a few thousand words. So if you want to read my musings, you can head over to becomeconscious.substack.com. One of my latest ones, I had a couple posts recently that got a lot of traction. One was called an unusually comprehensive exploration of maturity. And I basically just go into all the different facets of maturity. And then the second one is called The Tyranny of the Dull Mind, or Overcoming the Tyranny of the Dull Mind. And that one was how there's so much apathy and dullness in our society and what it looks like to reinvigorate this inspiration in oneself. Also goes along with this episode. Highly recommend you read it if you want to deepen into what was talked about on this episode. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. This episode only currently reaches a couple hundred people. So if you love it, share it with someone that you love in hopes of starting a conversation, starting a dialogue, feeling that enlivening energy between you and the people that you care about. And so I was going to say to rate it 5 stars, but I really have no goal of optimizing this thing and turning it into a machine that generates more users. It's really just a passion project of mine, something I deeply, recording these episodes helps me as much as it helps you. In recording these, I'm exploring things that have been on my mind that I haven't fully consolidated into coherent thoughts. So thank you so much for listening. I really love you deeply from the bottom of my heart, and it means a lot to me that someone would take time out of their day and explore these topics with me. If you want to start a dialogue, email me at ethanwnel@gmail.com and I will be sure to reply. It may take me a few weeks, but I will respond to you. We will start a conversation. So thank you for listening. Have a beautiful day.